I've said it before, I will say it again. The headlines may go elsewhere, but this economy never rests. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Friday today, the 6th of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. It has been, understandably, a week in which the political news has dominated the economic. And that news, the political, is better covered elsewhere, as you know, while we stay in our lane. And a crowded economic lane it has been. So we will get to it this week. Heather Long is at the Washington Post. Anna Swanson is at the New York Times. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
So, Heather, let me start with you. And, of course, we start with this morning's December jobs report. 223,000 new jobs in the economy the last month of last year. 3.5% is the new number on the unemployment rate, down 0.2. You called it on Twitter this morning great, which it is. Everything's moving in the right direction. I do wonder, though, if part of the reason it's great is that there are some signs of moderation a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really fair point. I mean, obviously, the Federal Reserve wants the labor market to cool off a little bit. But it's even though it's cooling off, and we saw a few signs of that, such as the wage growth slowing down 4.6% in the past year, instead of some of those numbers, really, really big numbers we saw earlier in the year last year. But at the same time, I think what's really encouraging to me about this report is even though job growth is slowing a little bit, what's really driving this is a lot more people are getting into the labor force. They're looking for jobs. Overall, last year, the labor force grew by 2.6 million. And in December alone, if there's no revisions to this number, 439,000 people joined the labor force. We've been talking about that on this show and, you know, over and over again, the need for just more workers in this economy. And to see that go up is really encouraging. And that could possibly prevent the need to do serious layoffs this year to get to the type of economy the Federal Reserve wants.
Yeah, and we should be clear just on the topic of layoffs, that while the layoffs are getting the headlines, right, Amazon and Salesforce just in the last couple of days, as we talked about here, the labor market is really, really strong. And I guess, Anna, the question is, and the thing that I'm sure is running through Jay Powell's mind, is why is it so strong even in the face of everything the Fed is doing to try to slow this economy?
Yeah, it's a great question because, you know, other things are kind of looking fairly dark, right? Yeah. You know, globally, there are all these geopolitical issues. Inflation remains really high, but yet the American economy just continues to chug along. And this was a really great report. I mean, the unemployment rate reached a new 50-year low. And even though there are a lot of people hurting in this economy, you know, clearly it is delivering for a lot of people in other ways. You know, I think that it ties back in part to the, you know, great savings that a lot of people have, you know, and just the continued energy of this economy. But I mean, I would also make the point that, you know, the experiences that people are having in this economy tend to be really different. So, you know, for those on top, everything feels great. And then there's also, you know, quite a significant proportion of the country where, you know, that are having a much different experience, that are really hurting. And unfortunately, as the Fed continues this campaign to fight off inflation, you know, those are the people that are really hurting, and whether or not the country actually does head into a recession next year.
Right. Let me just
this year. Sorry.
Yeah, this
sorry,
year. Right.
2023.
Yeah,
no,
I'm still writing that on my checks. So totally. Look, Anna, let me stick with you actually for a second, just because you mentioned the global situation, and one of the reasons we like to have you on is because you cover global trade and you keep an eye on those things, and we like to take advantage of that expertise. How worried are you as an observer of this about China and its COVID crisis that is there and looming and what that will mean for the global economy?
You know, it's really been a big source of chaos and drag on the global economy, right? Because China, of course, you know, had these very draconian lockdowns that were kind of messing up global supply chains. And then recently just kind of flipped the switch in the other direction and it's really opened up. There's a lot of uncertainty there about what COVID rates really are, and you know how many people are really sick and what the consequences of that are. But we are already seeing some signs of more disruptions in the supply chain because of that. And we did get trade data out this week as well, and we saw both imports and exports shrunk last month. So you know, I do think we're seeing a lot of evidence that global demand is weakening as inflation factors in. You have higher interest rates, and then you also have these challenges caused by the war in Ukraine and COVID lockdowns in China.
Good. Thank you for that. So, Heather, let me ask you about the Federal Reserve's minutes of its December meeting that came out this week, in which it was made incredibly clear that almost come what may, Jay Powell and the gang are sticking to their guns. And I guess I wonder if you were surprised about that at all. I mean, they've got all kinds of data they're looking at, and they are dead serious when they say we're gonna take care of inflation before we do anything else.
Yeah, it's interesting. Part of the reason, way that I read those minutes this week and some of the other communication we've had from Fed officials lately is a real pushback against Wall Street and this belief on among investors that the Fed could potentially end up lowering interest rates at some point this year. You know, this sort of dream scenario some investors seem to have that, okay, the Fed will push us into a recession and then they're going to cut rates and then everything's going to be great again for the markets. And I think the Federal Reserve is really pushing back against that narrative, and rightfully so, that that is a bonkers idea. And, you know, so does that mean that they're going to, you know, stick to exactly this plan that they've laid out at the first of the year? Of course not. We saw, remember this time a year ago, they hadn't even started raising interest rates, and they did a lot of shifting in a very short period of time. But I think that's really what's going on in the signaling that they're doing right now.
It did strike me, though, just super quick here, Heather. It did strike. We all know, right? Those of us who watch the Fed know that they watch and worry about what the markets do, and that that plays into financial conditions, which is a real and significant thing. But it was interesting to me that they were that explicit that they wanted to push back against this misconception, really, that the market has.
Well, part of the problem is when the market start when and market players start pricing in or start thinking that they're going to potentially lower rates or plateau them at their current level, you know, that creates looser financial conditions. You know, the market starts rallying, and unfortunately, in order to get inflation down, the Fed does need to keep a pretty tight lid on things, at least for the next foreseeable future.
Heather
You
Long,
have to
yeah, go on,
wonder
go
if
ahead.
that
Go ahead.
you have to wonder if that is going to work though, because I think we all know what song we're going to hear today on the show, right?
You're giving it away, man. You're giving it away. Anna Swanson at the New York Times, Heather Long at the Washington Post. Thanks, you two.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kai.
She did kind of give it away, though. I'll tell you what, Wall Street at the end of a shortened week went out on a win. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. So there was a lot for Jay Powell and the Fed to like about today's jobs report. The economy is adding jobs, but more slowly. People are coming back to the labor force looking for and finding jobs, as Heather was talking about. And do not sleep on wages. The growth in paychecks, average hourly earnings is the technical term, slowed from 4.8% year over year in November to 4.6% in December. Peak wage growth, for some context here, 5.6% annually, and that was last March. Now, that is good news if the thing you're worried about, oh, hello, Jay Powell, is inflation and you want to cool off the labor market. Slower wage growth isn't all that great, though, if you're the one getting the wages. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
In the past year, wage growth has been hot, with average hourly earnings at times rising twice as fast as before the pandemic. Aaron Tarasis at jobsite Glassdoor says for the Fed, this jobs report is welcome news.
Slowing wage growth was without a doubt the silver lining of this report for inflation hawks. The fact that it came down to the slowest pace we've seen since August 2021, when the labor market really started to take off, that is certainly a hopeful sign.
Folks who work in HR and recruitment definitely see the labor market pot coming off the boil to more like a steady simmer. Jim McCoy at the Manpower Group says with more workers flowing back into the labor force, companies don't have to poach from their competitors as much.
Easing pressure on employers to increase wages to attract employees from other employers.
He says there's also less pressure on the employee side to demand higher wages because gas prices are down and people aren't commuting as much.
Taking a little bit of the pressure off employees necessarily needing outsized pay raises to keep pace with overall inflation.
Yeah, but that overall inflation, it's still pretty high.
Inflation was roughly 7.1% over the year.
Sania Khan is chief economist at the recruitment technology firm Eightfold HI.
We saw wages grow roughly 4.6%. So although the dollar amount has been increasing on their paychecks, we're still seeing a decline in their real wages.
It is not good for workers, and it is not good for the economy.
Michael Mitchell is with the advocacy group Groundwork Collaborative. He says the Fed's efforts to cool the labor market will hit low-wage workers the hardest, as their pay has been going up the most. He argues the Fed should pause its rate hikes for now before they push unemployment higher and drag down workers' purchasing power. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
. 2022 was not kind to the automobile industry. Overall sales fell to the lowest they've been in more than a decade. There was a bright spot, though, and it came from EVs. Electric vehicle sales nearly doubled 2021 to 2022. And now, according to the auto website Edmunds, EVs account for about 5% of all U.S. car purchases. But as Marketplace's Matt Levin reports, some carmaker strategies have been more successful than others.
Tesla is still the 800-pound gorilla in EVs, with an estimated 60% of the market. But 2022 was the year competitors started to make real inroads, says Jessica Caldwell at Edmunds.
It's not just a, you know, one-trick pony with Tesla. We're seeing their market share of all of EVs start to decline significantly.
Korean automaker Hyundai and its affiliate Kia more than tripled the number of EVs they sold in 2021. Caldwell says their strategy was to attract customers with futuristic, attention-grabbing cars, but without the Elon Musk stigma or sticker price.
People that, you know, are, they want to have the latest and greatest, the newest technology, and they kind of want to be recognized for that.
While Korean car makers have bet big on EVs, their Japanese competitors are sticking with hybrids. Toyota accounts for less than 1% of the all-electric market. Michelle Krebs is with Cox Automotive.
They don't see that the market is going to be that big, that fast for EVs.
Ford and GM are doing what American automakers typically do, go big with all-electric SUVs and pickup trucks. Even if inflation means individual consumers may have less money to throw at an all-electric Silverado, Krebs says there's another important customer to keep in mind.
The fleet business. There are government fleets. There are commercial company fleets.
As of last year, the wait list for the all-electric Hummer was in the tens of thousands. There's also long waits for the all-electric Ford F-150 pickup truck. Seth Weintraub at the EV news website Electrek says since large EVs just take longer to build, Detroit should think smaller.
If they do see the equation like, hey, we can make four Equinoxes with the same battery as one Hummer, maybe we should think about that a little bit more.
Weintraub says he's taken the all-electric Hummer for a test drive and it was impressive. It just wouldn't fit in his garage. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Coming up.
She does my laundry still without me even asking. I know it's horrible to say, but she does it and I enjoy it.
Yeah, I bet. The perks of living at home. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 700 points today, 210%, finished at 33,630. The NASDAQ up 264 points. That's just over 2.5%, closed at 10,569. The S&P 500 gained 86 points, just over 2.25%, 38.95. We are finding out more about just how damaging Southwest Airlines' holiday travel meltdown was for that company's bottom line. The financial disclosure it filed with the SEC today indicates that Southwest lost as much as $825 million in its fourth quarter. More than half of that was due to revenue loss by canceling more than 16,000 flights in December. 16,000 flights. The rest is made up primarily of compensation paid to affected customers and additional pay for employees. One potential cost that was not mentioned in that filing, shockingly, the price of upgrading the outdated computer systems that many blame for that whole debacle. You are listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. On New Year's Day, California became the latest on a growing list of cities and states that require pay transparency in job posting. The idea being that that'll level the power dynamic, a little bit anyway, between companies and would-be employees. Another law took effect the first of the year in California, though, that could benefit workers in a different way by encouraging small business owners to give them, those workers, a stake in the company. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more on that one.
The recipe for German star cookies is deceptively simple, even if their pronunciation isn't to an English speaker.
How do you say that?
Zimsterns.
Christian Garcia at Proof Bakery in Los Angeles combines Zimsterna's short list of ingredients, just ground nuts, eggs, cinnamon, and sugar.
Currently sifting the powdered sugar, and the reason I do that is to avoid clumpage.
Sounds bad.
No one really wants a whole chunk of sugar when they're biting into that cookie.
Turning these raw ingredients into the perfect holiday treat is both a science and an art. It takes precision, passion, and just a dash of rum. Kind of like the alchemy it takes to run a successful small business in the rough and tumble food world.
It definitely takes like everyone who's there to make it work.
When Chef Na Young Ma opened Proof Bakery in 2010, she wanted it to be a place where workers could really feel invested in the business.
That we kind of all work together and assist each other.
But it took more than 10 years to make that dream official. In late 2021, Ma sold the business to the 24 or so staff. To get the cash, they got a loan that gets paid back with the profits of the company, and workers control a majority of the board.
It's an old model. It's not new, but, you know, we don't really have a lot of examples in the U.S. So, I mean, we definitely needed help.
They got help from a nonprofit called Project Equity, which also co-sponsored the California legislation. The organization helps businesses navigate legal requirements, secure financing, and train employees for the transition to ownership. Co-founder Hillary Abell says there are a lot of misperceptions about the model.
People sometimes hear about employee ownership and think, oh, that's something for hippies, for, you know, someone that's not me. Like, they think of everybody sitting around in a circle trying to decide, you know, what color pencil to buy.
But she says most worker cooperatives like Proof or companies with employee stock ownership plans keep the same management structure they had before and pay a fair market price to owners.
The main difference is that the fruits of the labor are shared broadly with all employees.
The potential benefits of the model have spurred increasing interest across the political spectrum, says Joseph Blasi, a distinguished professor at Rutgers who has studied employee ownership for decades.
It's been very, very hard for the working middle class to build wealth. Employee share ownership allows them to get at that part of the American dream where you can own a piece of the rock.
He's found workers in the average employee stock ownership plan build up more than $130,000 in equity. Those businesses also tend to be more productive and have lower turnover. Blasey says they're also a great option for the growing number of aging business owners whose families don't want to take over and who often struggle to find an outside buyer.
The issue here, really, in terms of barriers, is awareness.
Programs like California's are aiming to address that. The state currently has only about 100 employee-owned companies, but Project Equity has tallied hundreds of thousands of business owners near retirement age who might want to consider the idea. And they can look to Proof Bakery for proof that it works.
Any sandwiches or pastries today?
Since the bakery transitioned to a worker cooperative about a year ago, business has been thriving, and so has collaboration, according to baker Christian Garcia.
The mindset kind of took a turn where everyone's more focused on the success of the business, trying to pull it forward, trying to actually keep the mission values that we have in place.
Which, along with making delicious Zimsternas, those values include working as a team. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
I mentioned this at the time, I think, but there was a research note out not too long ago from Morgan Stanley about how young adults, that's 18 to 29-year-olds, who are living with their parents are driving a boom in luxury goods. All that disposable income they've got, apparently, since they're saving on rent. Well, yes, but the catch, of course, is that the living at home equation is kind of complicated. Here's today's installment of our series, Adventures in Housing.
My name is Abigail Gomez. I am 24 years old, and I currently live in my parents' house, which resides in Logan, Utah. The room I'm in now is the one I've been in since I was probably 14. I have two older sisters. I'm the baby. We have my oldest sister living at home as well with her two kids. She has a six-year-old and a almost two-year-old. There was a point in time right before COVID hit that I was looking for houses, actually. I had got approved for a loan, but the money I had in cash was like the only money I had to my name. So I was like, wow, if I put this as a down payment to this house, like I'm going to be left with nothing but a house. So I backed out and was just like, I'll just stay with my parents. It's fine. I like it here. It's cheap. You know, rent is probably a quarter of what I would pay if I was not here. My mom, she's a sweet, lovely woman. She, you know, cooks all the time at home, so I get those home-cooked meals. She does my laundry still without me even asking. I know it's horrible to say, but she does it and I enjoy it. My dad, okay, let me get into my dad. He takes care of my car. Like anytime I have any light go off in my car, it's like, dad, my car just went off with the air tire pressure. And he's like, okay, when you get home, we'll take care of it. So it's like so easy just to be here and just have my parents as a support. I paid off my car actually back in like 2018. So I don't have a car payment, but I do have like a cell phone payment that I pay like $70 a month. I pay Wi-Fi, which is $75 a month. I'm like trying to think of all the bills that I have. I buy like a lot of vitamins. So like every month I'm probably spending around $100 to $120 just on vitamins. I do buy a lot of clothes. I'm trying to limit myself to do better, but like I have so much money to spend that I'm just like, why not? I can afford it. The worst things about living at home, I would say number one, is just privacy. I was talking to my boyfriend the other day, like, sometimes my parents will knock, but it'll be like a 1 second wait and then they'll just walk in. So it's like, they don't even wait for me to say, come in. But I do want to say, you know, living at home has given me a good step up to where I would like to be in the future. being in the Mexican culture, you really see that happening often. And really, I'm okay with actually being at home and saying, yes, I live at home and I am loving it because I've been able to save a lot of money. I've been able to invest a lot of money. And it's just, I'm super grateful for my parents for just being able to support me in the ways that they have.
You can tell us about your adventures in housing or any adventures at all in this economy at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, saw this in the Wall Street Journal, news that the Census Bureau over the holidays, and this is data that was used in the 2020 census, by the way, the Census Bureau updated us on its definition of what an urban area is. It used to be, if you lived in a town with 2,500 people, that was classified as urban. Now the threshold is 5,000 people. The change affects about 4 million people in this economy who used to be urban but are now rural. And among the reasons this matters is that a whole lot of government programs, both state and federal, depend on whether an area is urban or rural. All right, off we go. But here is your moment of economic context. Should a trip to the multiplex be in your weekend plans? The website Box Office Mojo says Avatar 2 has topped $1.5 billion in ticket sales, makes it the highest grossing film of 2022 and 10th highest all time. It is also, I feel I have a duty to point out here, 3 hours and 12 minutes of your life that you can never get back. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I don't know what any of those people thought about that movie. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you on Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.